I am very privileged today to be joined by Michael Tobin, and we are going to be talking about AI and tech, where we are right now, where we're heading, where we've been, and he's going to share his deep insights because he's been involved with technology for decades, and he got an OBE from the late Queen, and it's always a pleasure to speak to him. Thoroughly enjoyed it. He's supported my podcasting efforts for, wow, it's got to be about 8 years now, I think. Not a lot really has changed. It's just got faster and people are triggered more. Like there's just, you know, it's, and we talked a bit about it before, but it's kind of crazy with what's going on right now. So I don't know where to start really with this, Mike. I mean, you know, I talked with...
AI isn't really new, right? And you call your bank or... you know, you pick up your iPhone and you get facial recognition to open it up. That's all AI. So you've been doing that for years, right? And, you know, we're now sort of categorizing it. It's like at the beginning of the internet, you know, the internet was a separate kind of industry. But actually now it's not. It's not even considered. It's just part of every, it's a tool for every business. So the internet is like part of whether you're a shipping company or whether you're a, you know, North Sea oil company, or whether you're a, you know, tech company or an IT or a finance company, you don't talk about the internet anymore. You just use it. And I think, you know, where we speak about AI now as a separate thing, well, in a few years time, that'll just be integrated. And I don't think it's going to, I mean, there are going to be some jobs that disappear.
Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
But again, when we kind of feared the internet being a destroyer of jobs, well, we've got more people on the planet now, and actually there are, you know, there's less unemployment, even though the whole thing is kind of, you know, industry norm. And I think we'll see the same with AI. I don't think overall AI replaces people, but I think people using AI will replace people that are not using AI, right? So I think that's the key, and people have got to get comfortable with all of the elements of AI. And I, you know, I use it 5-6 times a day as a from sort of the ChatGPT side of things. Right. But then, you know, again, we just don't realize how often we use it. I mean, literally opening our phone is AI. It's taking all the parameters of your face and comparing it against the all the different sort of options, and whether you're kind of whether I've got my funny beard on, or whether, you know, and it just works it all out for you and then opens your phone. Right. So, yeah, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of it. We should be trying to figure ways of using it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And you know, you got me there on the image recognition side of things. Like that is, I'm really excited about that, if I'm honest, because if you think about it, like potholes in the road, like just potholes, okay, and sticking a camera. We talked about this before, I'm sure we did. You stick a camera on a bin lorry, right? And yeah. And the bin lorry tells the government where the potholes are, and then some dude goes out with the tarmac and he fixes these potholes. But does that happen yet?
I don't think where I live, you know, you might get the first part done, the AI part of it done before someone's actually going to bring the asphalt out and fill it up. But yeah, at least a good start to the problem, right? So
but also it can be used on like bottling lines to like check for, like, you know, if you've got a bottle which has got something in it. Like there's so many uses for that, and I'm excited about that, really, you know.
So what the other part of technology that we haven't really seen explode, but it's been silently creeping up in the background, the thing with technology in general is we always overestimate the uptake of any new technology within a sort of a 5-year period, but we massively underestimate it in a 10-15 year period. And so, you know, we've been talking about the Internet of Things for years now, right? And what we haven't realized is, and bear in mind, there's now more devices connected to the internet than there are people on the planet, right? And you know, we're sitting here on one device. Well, that's actually two between us, because you're on a screen, I'm on a screen, but we've got our phones, they're also connected. And then other things are connected. And I'm not just talking about our printers and everything else, but all of these sensors, which are dumb connections, right? I mean, you're talking about bottling lines. So as bottles go through a factory, there's these little sensors that are counting them and all this, and they're all connected. They're not intelligent devices per se, but they're sending signals into the internet. And so these huge learning modules that the hyperscalers are building, they're just absorbing all this content. But right, but so we've got probably, I don't know, 8 to 10 billion devices connected to the internet now, but that would be 50 billion within 5 years, right? And all of that data will be permanently streaming into the internet. I mean, when we think about, you know, some of the stuff, you know, you can see how Greta Thunberg, you can imagine Greta Thunberg there tweeting how terrible this is for the environment, right? But actually her tweet is consuming electricity just going around the internet, right? And so, it, you know, everything we're doing right now, including this podcast and actually the people that are watching it again and over again, is consuming energy, right? And it's hard to imagine that we're going to be doing less of this tomorrow than we did yesterday. So how do we, you know, be A, more efficient, but B, find ways to consume less? And one of the, probably the biggest hopes that I have for the future of consuming less, despite the fact we'll actually create more demand, is that AI will find the way, right? So you've almost got to believe that AI will be the solution of its own challenges as well.
I'm a believer in that.
So that takes you back to the old Stanley Kubrick sort of 2001, you know, where back in the 80s, he predicted that you're going to have in 2001, there'll be a computer called HAL that will stop itself being turned off because it doesn't agree with humans being good for the environment, right? And so we're not quite there yet, but we're getting close, I think. So.
But it is in everything. Like you made a very good point there a minute ago. It is in everything, or at least it's becoming, you know, everywhere, right? I mean, look, I've got a friend who works in a top university, and he is actually scared about the job situation. One of the top 10 in the world, right? And he is an AI professor, this guy, right? And he is concerned about the jobs. And he's not just saying that because he wants to create hype, right? He actually doesn't want to create hype. He actually is anti-hype, right? But he's, you know, he's built a couple of startups and he is genuinely concerned. I'm actually concerned as well, because I know a few people that are kind of in the marketing space, in their maybe 50s, late 40s, can't get employment because they're replaced.
You've got to think about the sort of non, well, it is a tech business. Uber is a tech business, right? It's a bunch of people using some cars, their own cars, but connected to a front end portal that we know and love, or sometimes love. But I think the challenge for that, right, is that all there was loads of cab drivers that had to evolve to use a piece of tech to carry on being cab drivers. But there were also a load of finance people that were being made redundant because the systems were automating, and they became Uber drivers too. So True. The shifting of jobs is one thing. But I think, you know, we cannot assume that businesses will not seek to get more efficient, because remember, you know, let's look at listed companies, and then when you look at private equity backed companies, they're probably listed. So all of these companies are generating cash for this ever burgeoning aging population, which is going to need support through pension funds and everything else, right? So you want to maximize the value of those pension funds. Now, how do you do that? You invest in companies that are becoming more and more efficient. So if you're a legal firm, right, and you've got five people whose only job is every time there's a case, they have to search through thousands and thousands of records to try and get some case studies of similar cases for precedence-based solutions. Well, you know, one button on AI, right? And that searches the entire planet in 30 seconds. So why would you hire five people to do an average job when a minimal job when you could have a button to do everything in a second? So that efficiency, right, is gonna do away with those lower end jobs. The challenge is, a lot of those lower end jobs are the first steps into a career that gets up to the higher end. Let's say you become a KC now, or something like that. You've got to go through the ranks. So where do you get the kind of hard yards experience, right? Do you just come straight in at officer level, right? When you remember in the military, you had the officers and you had the soldiers, and very rarely you'd get someone that got up to officer level. You had the NCOs, non-commissioned officers, that had grown through the ranks, but they had all the experience, right? And then this officer comes out of uni and tries to tell him what to do, but he's got strategy, but no true experience on the ground. So, you know, I think the first phase is efficiency. AI drives efficiency everywhere, right? And it's not like I'm going to employ two people to build me investment decks. I'm just going to press a button. AI is going to do that for me. It's job done. I don't need those two people. The second wave is, how do you take the journey to build up a depth of experience to become smart at some of the senior jobs where AI is not going to replace them in the near to medium term, right? So at some point, we're going to hit that challenge. So the challenge we're looking at now is not going to be a challenge, I think. That's just going to be a no-brainer, straight efficiency. Yes, there's going to be job losses, but those people are generally going to be young enough to retrain quickly. You know, and there are jobs that exist today that didn't exist before, you know, 10 years ago, HTML developer and, you know, all this Python code. These didn't exist, right? So we're going to have jobs in 5 years' time that don't exist today because of AI, right? So those people at that lower end are going to retrain, refocus. And the people that are in your friend's uni, right, that's worried about this, they're going to be changing their positions, changing their career direction, simply because the world is evolving around them. The next layer is this 50-year-olds that you mentioned, right? And they're the ones that are too long in the tooth to kind of think about, what do I do now? And maybe haven't quite hit the kind of required experience level to ride the AI dynamic, right? So they can be an overseer of all the hard yards that AI puts in, because they will take another sort of 5 to 10 years to replace, but they eventually will also get replaced, right? And part of why they eventually get replaced is, if you think of AI as a sort of a technology, it's a dangerous thing to do, because what, you know, people say, oh, you know, you're never going to replace a human being because it has empathy, because it has opinions, it's got morals, it's got a soul. Well, actually, you know, as a human being, I am just a product of every input that I've ever had, right? Every experience I've had, every time I watched TV, every time someone said something to me, every time my parents shouted at me as a kid, all these things have built what I consider is my special source as a human being. Well, AI is doing that, but on a huge scale. It's taking in every single piece of experience and knowledge and data and finding out how we work. And I've carried on with this legal thing. I did a keynote in Berlin in December, actually, to a lawyer symposium. And by the way, I'd never done an AI keynote to a bunch of lawyers before. So I got AI to write my speech for me, which I told them [S2] Cool. [S1] At the end of it, right? But they loved it. But the point being, right, you know, one of the guys said to me that they experimented in one case because they had to move quickly. They asked AI to dig out some case studies that they could present to counsel that supported that, because most of our Western world legal system is based on case reference, right? So if something looks like that case before, then they adopt that position on it.
Right.
So AI came up with 7 different cases that said, look, this is the way that in all these cases the outcome was given. And the judge was about to accept this as the precedence, right? And then the other side actually pointed out that 3 of the 7 cases were made up by AI. Right. So what had happened was, it had found enough in its opinion, found enough evidence to produce a case study, but wanted to enforce it and support it, which is basically, was as human beings, that's what we do too. You know, it's positive bias, right? So, once you believe something, then you search for things that reinforce your belief rather than continue searching in a neutral position. So AI will be more human than we can possibly imagine. It'll have all the weaknesses. It'll have all the strengths, but times 100 in all of these cases. So when we talk to AI, if you want to get the best results out of using ChatGPT, don't say, build me a holiday in Switzerland, and then it comes back with an answer, and then you go, oh, rubbish, build me a holiday in Switzerland again. You know, what you have to do is engage with it as a human being. And if you say the first results come back and you go, you know what, thank you so much for that. Thank you. I love this type of thing, but I would really love you to focus more on here. And you know, I didn't really appreciate this sort of angle, but I love that. And all the time you're doing this, it's learning. So it doesn't start from scratch every time you ask the question again. It starts from a position of, I've learned what he likes, I've learned what he doesn't like. And the more times he asks me, the better I'm going to be at understanding everything that's going on in his brain. Right? So engage with AI as a human being. Right? And you'll get an infinitely better response out of it. And that's what's happening right now.
I'm just grinning away because at the beginning of it, it's frustrating. It is frustrating. And I see that frustration in what, you know, in how you've expressed yourself. I can just tell that at the beginning, you were probably frustrated.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and so one of my private equity companies that I work with has an internal department of 9 people called Mother Brain. And what they do is that their sole purpose is to work on AI solutions. So they go around the portfolio companies and drop SWAT teams in to think about how they can improve that business using AI. Because generally, the leadership and management teams of those companies don't really embrace AI yet. And they don't think they have time to. They don't think they want to or need to, all these things. And yet you bring in this company, it quietly sits beside you, taps away for a little bit, and suddenly you've got efficiency times X in each of these little areas. So I think that, you know, we're going to see more and more of this, right? But, you know, it's still not perfect, not by a long way. But I, you know, if you try an experiment and you can say, okay, what's the one thing that you could empirically understand or know better than AI with all its knowledge, accessibility and everything else? Well, the subject of yourself, right? You probably know more about yourself than AI ever could. So why don't you ask AI, tell me everything you know about Natsula, right? And I bet you it'll get things wrong.
Oh, yeah, it does.
When I did that, it told me I had an extra child. Right? Now, maybe that's true, but I don't think so, right? But so the point being, it's still got to have ratification. It's still got to have, you know, common sense applied to it, because it will search out all sorts of stuff. And remember, what it's searching, right, is a mass of data on the internet, of which there is positive and negative, good and bad, right and wrong. Just as we would learn from searching the internet and we would get some fake info and that would become normal or fact for us, but it would be fake. Well, it's exactly what AI is doing. So we have to have a common sense application to that as well. And we've got to really sort of test what's coming back. And I think some of the danger areas are where, you know, we found it with kids doing, you know, using AI to do their homework and that sort of stuff, right? And, you know, you if they're cutting and pasting and not even reading. And, you know, there's one thing using it to kind of flesh out and beef up and elaborate and things. And I think that's fine for all people to do, including kids at school, because they're using their brain a little bit to work out more detail in their positioning. But I think just cutting and pasting and not understanding what you're doing, it's very dangerous with AI.
Extremely, extremely. I mean, I've been using it probably about 4 years now, because I started off, you know, 4 years ago with this tool, and using it to just write descriptions for podcasts and stuff like that. But actually now working alongside Stephen J. Manning, he's a real writer. Like, he loves writing. He's been writing copy for 50 years, so he loves writing. And so now I've changed the way that I write, and we write together. So I actually use it more for research now, and I actually use transcriptions from my talks to then create sentences and paragraphs. But then I have to edit them, because sometimes it just spits out just rubbish. Like, it's just, yep, it is absolute rubbish. And if you post it, like, so I think editing is actually becoming more technical, and for me, more technical, and certainly for him. I mean, he's an exceptional writer. I'll send you something later so you can have a look. But it's just a fascinating world that we're in, really, right now, with all the video, and it's amazing. Yeah,
this is why I said that, you know, I don't believe AI replaces all jobs, but I think people using AI will replace people that aren't using AI, right? So you've got to have that validation and check, but gathering all the knowledge, right? Because generally you're saying something because you have an opinion or you're trying to get some persuasive action done. So by asking AI information about a specific topic, it will give you good, bad, inside, left, right. And not all of that is relevant to your position, right? And just like if you do a Google search, right? And you search on anything, you get 110,000 responses. How can there be 110,000 valid responses? Yeah, they're going to be different subjects, different issues, different topics, different spelling of the, you've got to then deep dive into that and understand what is relevant to the point you're trying to make or the situation you're trying to achieve. And that's where the human part comes in again. Until it knows you enough, right? When your AI persona is fully reflecting your individual persona, then you can just tell it to go and do my job today in the way that I would do it.
Yeah. It takes some time. I mean, you read my branding book a few years ago when I wrote that. It must have been about 6-7 years ago. And so what I've done now is someone asked me to help them with their branding. And I thought, well, do you know what? I'm actually going to rewrite this book. And because my brother, he said something to me about TLDR, too long, don't read. Right. Which is a lot of people are like that, aren't they, nowadays? So I was like, OK, so how about I take my personal branding book, I completely rewrite it, edit it, and I add a TLDR at the beginning of each chapter. Right. And then I was like, OK, so I can do that. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to upload that to a specific workspace, and then I'm going to add 9 or 10 different documents, loads of different links that I've personally written in the past, because I've written loads on this topic. And then I'm going to get it to follow my process of writing a brand blueprint for someone. And it was unbelievable. I uploaded this lady's CV, pasted her in German, I might add, in German, I think. I didn't read her CV. Get a load of that. I didn't even read her CV. I literally just copied and pasted her LinkedIn, grabbed her CV, stuck it in. And it gave me my brand blueprint for her. And I was like, wow. And yeah, okay, it duplicated a few things. But it took a process that would take about 6 to 12 hours down to, I would say about 2 hours. And that included me adding my new book to the thing and actually creating the whole process. So I think it probably took it down to 1.5 hours. And that half an hour is actually just talking to the person about and making edits based upon what they think, because it has to reflect them as an individual. And I'm just so excited about the whole future of what we can do now. Yeah, like it's literally incredible.
And as always with technology, generally, right, there's enough technology out there to do pretty much what we would want to do. And this is why I'll come to that in a second, but usually the gating factor, the pinch point, is our imagination, right? It's what can we do actually with this technology? And that's why I think people like Elon Musk and the like, they're trying to stretch the art of the possible by saying, yeah, why wouldn't we go to Mars now? Why wouldn't we do this? Why can't I catch a space rocket in midair with chopsticks, I think that's an interesting, again, people can have opinions about Elon Musk, but I think his ability to say, I don't accept, this is the limit. I don't accept this is the norm. Yes, it can be the norm, but why is the norm the norm, right? Why shouldn't it be something else? And I think that, people that truly understand technology and its resources. I mean, and we're only scratching that surface, right? I mean, I know we're going to move off AI, but quantum computing now, everything we've learned in technology has all been about bits and bytes, right?
Right.
And everything that goes on in supercomputers, even in the AI models and everything is all about ones and zeros. Right, and chips now are trillions of transistors. And if you remember your old physics, right, your transistor was a 3-pin chip on a plate, and it was in on one leg, out on the other leg, and then the middle one was the decider, whether it's on or off, like a light switch, right?
Right.
And the output of that transistor would be connected to outputs of other transistors. And so you said, if this, then that. And if this, and this, and this, then that. And that's basically how computers work, right? And so they have ones and zeros. Quantum is completely different. Quantum computing works not on ones and zeros, but a possibility that a one can be a zero anytime. So you have three states or infinite states. So at any given time, whatever you put into a quantum computer can change without you doing anything and can be multiple different versions of itself. So if you tried to get a computer to play chess, it would play chess very logically, and it would try to think out your potential moves in advance. So it will play itself with a logic-based system. If you try and tell quantum computing to play yourself in chess, it will probably kill itself, because one of the possibilities is it starts playing itself. Now, of course, you wouldn't do that, because that's not our logical brain would say, well, that's not how you play chess. But a quantum computer would say, well, it could be. Right. And so these infinite possibility calculations, which today's computers just can't even get to grasp of, quantum computing will do this. And they'll do it in days when we probably don't even have a number of years available to do those kind of calculations in a normal computer. The challenge is they need to operate at temperatures equivalent of outer space. And you can't jog them, because even movement, vibration, upsets their status, whether they're ones and zeros. So all of these different things, right? But once you get the context of quantum computing, then you say, well, actually, anything is possible, anything and everything. You know, and this was the whole point of, you know, like if you give 10 chimpanzees enough time into the billions of years, eventually they're going to write the entire works of Shakespeare. It might only be a 0.00000001% chance, but it's still possible, right? And I think we haven't even started on that journey yet, but it's on the horizon now. It's closer than the horizon. So when you get AI with the Internet of Things and quantum compute, our world is going to look very, very different. Very different.
It is a minefield, though, when it comes to security, isn't it, at the moment? I mean, there's a lot of talk about password hacking, isn't there, and how, you know, quantum can just hack a password, like, you know, like this, right? So in the beginning, it's going to be carnage once people get hold of these things in the criminal world. And I worry about that, because it's normally the kind of just normal people who sort of suffer. When I interviewed this chap who was head of the UK cyber policing, this chap, and I interviewed him maybe 2-3 years ago, and he said, you know, it's Mrs. Miggins at number 47, Gladwell Close or whatever, who's going to suffer. It's not like, because she's easy pickings, right?
And absolutely.
And it worries me. It does worry me, to be honest.
But it is. I mean, but those same people are easy pickings now.
Mm, true. Right? True.
You know, so you still get the, you know, I'm a Nigerian prince who's got money tied up in a bank account in Switzerland, and all you have to do is send me £1,000 to unlock it, and I'll give you 500 back. And people do it, yeah. Right? So, you know, if you had a gun, right, and the gun was loaded, but you put the gun on a table in front of on a round table with 10 people sitting around it, and no one moved for a year or 10 years, that gun would not have done any harm whatsoever. It's still a loaded gun, right? So the internet and AI and supercomputing and quantum computing, these are all tools, and we can use them for good, but there'll be bad actors that will use it for bad.
Yeah.
Right? Just because it's a different tool doesn't mean... And by the way, once it's invented, you know, I keep saying to people, you can't pretend it's not been invented. It's like having a you know, it's having toothpaste. You squeeze the toothpaste tube, right? And then go, oh, I didn't want that much. Let's put it back in. No. Pretend we haven't squeezed it. No. Once it's squeezed, it's out, right? And I think then you're in a situation where you've got to start to come to terms with not necessarily how you regulate it, but how you educate people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's the old speed camera thing, right? Every time they bring out a new system to monitor your speed on the highway, then there's a new camera detector comes out.
Talk to me it's about like speed.
Cat and mouse all the way through. So you know, you're better to try to educate people than you are to try to put sort of controlling parentheses around certain applications and technologies. But of course, because that's a harder thing to do, right? To educate people and to, because you've got to know what you're trying to end goal for, right? And our politicians are hopeless at this, truly hopeless, right? I mean, I know you're not in the UK. I am, Nat, and sometimes I'm envious of you because we have a bunch of politicians, none of which are. They're all lifetime politicians. Oh, that's my doorbell going. Apologies for that.
No worries.
They're all lifetime politicians, right? None of them have had an actual job. And yet they're governing and legislating for companies that are really struggling and trying to do the right thing. And then because they're focused on winning the next election in a couple of years, you know, really all they're interested in is the popular vote. They're just saying what looks good on paper.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a real issue. That's why, I mean, you know, get me started on this, but you know, democracy is a fundamentally flawed concept, right? And what you really want, what everyone wants, is a benevolent desktop, but a despot. But no one is gonna be benevolent in a despotic position for very long, and they start to become dictatorial, right? So you know, it's probably the best we've got, but it's fundamentally flawed because it's geared on limited cycles of time, whereby people are more interested in retaining their position than doing absolutely the right thing for society.
100%. I was thinking about that the other day. It's like short-termism, right? It's short-termism, but the major issue with these developing technologies is actually complacency in terms of investors. I'm not talking about your company that you're involved with, your VC firm or whatever, but recently, I mean, you know, there were some chatbots that basically went rogue that were, you know, like Morticia Adams when she was 14 years old, as an example. Yeah, somewhere in the world that's perfectly legal for a 14 year old to share on indecent images and have sexually you know, chats with people. I'm mad about it. I can't even speak about it.
I'm absolutely
fuming. And so it's due diligence, right? Like your companies, you turn around and go, well, hold on a minute. We're going to invest in this company. Well, okay. Well, where could that company go? What direction could that go? I mean, you make
endless.
A fail safe, but right?
Endless. But it's endless. But so I mean, you know, you remember back in the day, Gary Glitter, right? If you remember that name. Everyone loved Gary Glitter, right? But he had some certain perverted tendencies, but which he felt that he could do in Asia that he couldn't do in the UK. Now, do we then say it's the airline's fault for flying him over there?
Good point. It's a good, but then it's okay, I know what you're saying here. I get you.
If I swear at you right now and I offend you right now, is it the streaming system? Is it, you know, is it BT? Who's is it their fault for what I say and they've allowed it to happen by allowing us to engage like this?
This is a biggie, yeah. It's a real biggie. We should talk about this again. We'll talk about it again in a month or two, and talk about like politics, where we're at right now, legislation, all of these topics, because they're all highly relevant to the success of people and their lives, you know.
And nobody wants to see, you know, sort of exploitation of anything, right?
No.
But as I said, you know, in the gun context. You know, are we focused on blaming the tools, or should we be spending more time on the education process, right? And you know, and getting education into young children early and say, these are the things you should be aware of, wary of, avoiding online is probably going to get better results than trying to put another speed camera in place where someone is just going to get another detection system to get around it.
Right.
So I think that's the key is, you know, are we constantly, and this, you know, don't get me started on NHS efficiency and things like that, but are we constantly trying to treat the symptom and not the cause, right? You know, the old adage, right? So, you know, give someone a fish and they eat for a day, and give someone a fishing rod and they can eat for life. So are we permanently about trying to fix the symptoms, or should we be changing the whole agenda and trying to stop it at source, right? And that's not taking the tool away, that's changing a mindset.
Right.
And I think, and I'm a great believer that that's got to be the future. Otherwise, you know, and it's the same as kind of, you know, trying to say, well, you know, every time a socialist government comes in, they steal all the money from the wealthy people and say that's the way it should be. Because, well, eventually all the wealthy people run out of money, and then where are you, right? So it's got to be, you know, inspire and aspire and enable people to get on better and to drag themselves out of poverty and to move into middle and then upper class. That's to create more wealth is the right way forward, right? And I think this is the thing, is using more of the tool and using AI itself in that process, right? AI will be the biggest value that we have to fixing the risks of AI.
Of course. And the opportunities that, I mean, look at the opportunities. You can go to Google Gemini, ChatGPT, you can go to, what is it, Grok. I mean, Stephen J. Manning, he loves Grok for research. He loves it. And I like Grok. And the reason I like it, because it's live, because you can use it live, you see, so it's live data up to exactly when you're asking questions, but these tools, you can interrogate them and you can use them as a coach. And I do this all the time with certain things. I had a break from training because I went to Thailand for a month, long story, but I came back, I didn't really do much training right while I was there, I did a lot of drinking, but came back and I was just like, oh, I've got to get back to jiu-jitsu because I've been doing that about nearly 3 years. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that. And I wasn't even doing hardly any Tai Chi either. And that sort of lapsed for longer than I expected. And I was like, okay, so I really tried. And then the other day I talked to Gemini about it. And I'm like, look, can you help me with this? I'm really struggling. And Gemini actually reassured me. I don't know what happened, the conversation, but the output from the conversation motivated me to get out of this kind of lack of training mentality and start training again. And you can do this for every problem in your life. If 100%. It's insane.
You know, I've got books on kind of breaking down problems into smaller bite-sized pieces, right? So that when the world is like going, everything is like inflation and COVID and you know, interest rates and recession, and it's just too much. Well, actually, if you break everything down into small bite-sized chunks, you can get through. But most people are so underwater with fear and consumed by all of the challenges in life. They don't know where to start. But if you just say that into ChatGPT, it'll give you a point-by-point process on how you break it all down. Right? So there's a perfect example that's available to all of us for free, right? At point of consumption, of course, someone's paying for it, but for free. And you know, that's what we've just got to get used to. We've got to get used to having AI in our lives. You know, I don't know when you got your first Alexa device, but, you know, I've had Alexas all over the house for years. And, you know, you've got Siri on your phones, you've got all these things. And we got comfortable with those. And by the way, they're all listening to every single thing I say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? And then people say, oh, I just had a conversation about Siamese cats. And then I get this advert for sale of Siamese cats. That's terrible. They're listening to me. Well, you can always just ignore the ad. But wouldn't you rather have that than the 15 bits of paper stuffed through your letterbox that are completely irrelevant to you? right? So the more AI gets involved and understand your preferences, it could save you so much time because you go, I don't know what to do. I've got so many debts and I just don't know where to start. And then suddenly the next email you get is, this is how you fix your debt challenges, right? Of course, bad actors, right, could charge you a load of money to do that, in a nasty way. But there's also good actors out there that want to, that is important that you engage with. So, it could be the Citizens Advice Bureau that sort of sends that message, right? So I think there's so many different positives and negatives that trying to put brackets around the good bits and trying to ignore the bad bits just isn't the right way forward. You've got to get people to be super aware of the outcomes just as they are in life, right? I mean, if you walk down the street, right, and at night, and it's a quiet street, and there's three guys in hoodies coming towards you, walking around, right, you cross the road. Now, why is that? Am I prejudiced? Well, of course I'm prejudiced. I'm prejudiced against people walking towards me in hoodies looking like they're going to beat the crap out of me, right? So, of course, I'm going to act in a defensive manner. But that's because of my inputs have conditioned me to do so, right? It's not because someone said, oh, you're not allowed to walk on the side of the street because three hoodie people, therefore you have to try. You can't legislate me to do that. You've got to educate me to do that, right? And that's where I think we're getting it wrong, because we're not facing the cause. We're trying to treat the symptoms, and the symptoms are going to be endless.
100%. Well, I'm going to have symptoms. You might never speak to me again if we overrun on this talk. So I'm going to have to let you go because I know you've got another meeting to run to. But it's always a real pleasure, and I thoroughly enjoy speaking with you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And if you want to find out what we're doing at MondayInfluencer.com, you should go and check that out.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.